Did you know that in Ohio, the state Supreme Court could just ignore the reproductive rights amendment we passed last year?
But so many Ohioans voted for it.
That's why we need to keep extremists out of the court by voting for Justices Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
I don't know if I can remember that.
Here's the trick. Just remember, don't stop fighting. DSF. Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes. If you supported Issue 1 last year, don't stop fighting. Vote for Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
This message was paid for by Red, Wine, and Blue.
Hello, boys and girls, ladies and gentlemen, everybody out there on the internet. Welcome to Take the Black Live, the show where myself, Dan Selke, and Daniel Roman of The Curtain Changing Person is talk all things sci-fi, fantasy, movies, TV, robot space, lasers, horses, swords, flightless birds, the vampire, and so on. As I said, I am Dan Selke, the editor of winnerscoming.net, and I have gotten a new haircut. I will be taking compliments on it now. Daniel, how are you?
Looks pretty good, Dan. Looks pretty good.
Thank you.
Audio listeners, you're missing out. Come find us on YouTube. I'm good. I'm excited to get into some nerdy debate today because we have a juicy show all about adaptations, which you know how my nerd heart loves to discuss that sort of stuff. So I can't complain. How are you, Dan? And how are all of you in the chat?
Yeah, good to see you, Martha. Good to see you, Julie. Good to see everybody out there. I'm doing well. I'm freshly shorn. It's lovely here in Chicago. And I am ready to talk about whatever nerdy crap you have prepared for us. Daniel, what are we discussing today? And thank you, Martha. Thank you, everybody. I don't need compliments. Just that if I don't get them, I don't know that I'm real. You know what I mean? I think you know what I mean. Go on, Daniel.
Yeah. Yeah. If without them, is this all not an illusion? No, but today, so we are going to talk about some Westeros updates, as we always do. And then we're going to be getting into the adaptation rumble or something like something pithy like that. Basically, we're going to look at the big four fantasy shows. That would be House of the Dragon, The Rings of Power, The Wheel of Time, and The Witcher. And we're going to kind of analyze how each of them has adapted their respective source materials for screen, which ones we think are maybe doing a better job, which ones are having issues, and kind of the unique challenges behind each of them. So it should be a good time. And yes, it is official. Those are the big four fantasy shows. I realized as I wrote this that no one had ever really like proclaimed that, but they just kind of, I think it's pretty clear at this point that they are the four big fantasy, the successors to a Game of Thrones, as it were. But before we get there, let's talk about House of the Dragon. So there have been some headlines about House of the Dragon cast giving hugely disappointing updates at Comic-Con and stuff like that. So Dan, my question for you, is House of the Dragon season 3 in trouble? Should we be worried?
No, basically, at New York Comic Con this past weekend, a bunch of actors from the show, Matt Smith, Fabiana Frankel, Tom Glenn Carney, and I think a host, I apologize, that's a fourth person I don't recognize, were on a panel, as actors do, just fielding questions, and a couple of them said they hadn't heard anything about what's going to happen next, they hadn't gotten scripts yet, and I think the internet, as it tends to do sometimes, narrativized it a bit, said the fact that they hadn't gotten scripts was some kind of bad sign. And I just don't think that follows. I think they said they're going to start shooting in early 2025. There's just no reason to think that is a problem. Like, for instance, an actor on the Fallout show, the big Amazon video game adaptation sci-fi show Fallout, said they're going to start filming next month, November. And I remember that the star of that show, Ella Purnell, hadn't gotten scripts as of like a couple of weeks ago. So actors, I don't know, they're not very important in this process. They get the scripts when they get the scripts, I don't think.
The shade.
I mean, yeah, it's nothing to be alarmed about. I saw some kind of alarmist reactions like, bad news, House of Dragon season 3 in trouble.
Yeah.
No, the fact that the actor's not gotten scripts like a good 4, 5, 6 months before shooting starts doesn't really mean anything in particular.
Yeah, I'm definitely inclined to agree with that. You know, it seemed like they were kind of having fun with that response. That moderator, I believe, is Josh Horowitz, the Happy Sad Confused podcast. Yeah, was the person doing that panel. And yeah, you know, Matt Smith saying, "I've not heard hide nor hair of about season three." And then Fabian Frankel says he's heard some things that he couldn't possibly share. Yes, I won't imitate George R. R. Martin, but get me doing a British accent and it's hard to turn it off.
Oh, nice. It's good to know.
But yeah, so Leo says, "I'm surprised they weren't writing during the airing of the season." And, you know, it is possible that they were. Like, we did hear some reports that, you know, George R. R. Martin had met with them and they had kind of tried to break like a season three outline and how far the show should go. So I don't think they're starting from scratch once the season ends. But, you know, I think legally they probably can't be writing full scripts until they get the green light from HBO, which didn't actually come through until season two was airing. Just in terms of how they employ everyone and employ all the writers, they have much stricter timeframes. This was a whole thing during the writer's strike about how long studios actually employ the writers, and they can only be writing during those times. So, yeah, nothing about this smells weird to me, especially because it's seasons into a show, right? Like, I think with first seasons of a show, scripts tend to come a little earlier because then it's about getting everyone on board on the thing. So you kind of need that proof of concept to be able to show actors to get them on board. But I think by the time you're at season three of a huge show like this that everyone's already contracted for, they just need to take the time that they need to take. And yeah, it's October. They're not due to even start pre-production, I think, until early next year. So yeah, I don't think this is strange. I totally agree with you. And as for whether that means they're rethinking some things after the whole George R. R. Martin fiasco of a few months ago, your guess is as good as mine. I hope they are, but I wouldn't like hold my breath on that one either.
The most fun thing about the narrative reaction is I feel like it's being filtered through the prism of George R. R. Martin's coming out against the show, and that's why there's like some panic baked into headlines, because it's just a fun story to think about, right? It's a fun story to think about. Ooh, what are they panicking? What are they trying to? What are they trying to do things behind the scenes? But we don't know. There's nothing out of the ordinary here at all, and we won't know specifics about anything until they choose to share them. So keep on trucking, House of the Dragon people, and we will be driving alongside. We'll be in the sidecar.
Yes, yes. And yeah, Priyanshu in the chat says, "Actors only receive scripts during pre-production, which will start post 31st of October, confirmed by Ryan Condal." And I think, you know, there's probably wiggle room on that kind of stuff. But yeah, I wouldn't be alarmed until pre-production's underway and they didn't get them or something. So yeah, stay tuned for that.
Did you know that in Ohio, the state Supreme Court could just ignore the reproductive rights amendment we passed last year?
But so many Ohioans voted for it.
That's why we need to keep extremists out of the court by voting for Justices Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
I don't know if I can remember that.
Here's the trick. Just remember, don't stop fighting. DSF. Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes. If you supported Issue 1 last year, don't stop fighting. Vote for Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
This message was paid for by Red, Wine, and Blue.
Leo says, "I'm jealous of how slow horses manage to work fast, but that's a smaller show." And yeah, obviously, that's a show that needs just about no special effects, but it is pretty amazing how far ahead that show is, because their fourth season just wrapped. They already filmed season 5, and they've already been renewed for season 6. So if every show could work like that, we'd all be very, very happy. But a few other just very small highlights from Comic-Con. So Tom Glenn Carney, he was asked, "Is Sunfire really dead?" Sunfire being his dragon, who everyone assumed was dead in the show and who book readers know. He was. And he wouldn't say, obviously, and he hasn't seen the script, so maybe he can't even say. I assume he knows, though. But he talked a little bit about how dragons in Westeros are an extension of yourself, compared them to daemons from His Dark Material, demons, and said it makes it all the more painful when something bad happens to them. So he didn't answer the question, but he did make us real sad about it. And the only other highlight thing I just wanted to shout out. So Fabian Frankel recalled auditioning for Kristen. He said it was around a year after he auditioned that he got a call about the part. And then originally they were looking for a, quote, Jason Momoa type. So once they abandoned that, they decided to go with him. It's hard to tell if he's joking, but still fun. Still fun to think that maybe they had different ideas for Kristen and then changed them.
That is interesting.
And landed with Fabian Frankel.
A Jason Momoa type being like kind of an insular incel weirdo. That would have changed the tenor. Oh, well, we'll never know.
It would have. So that's all the juice from Comic-Con, really. House of the Dragon only appeared there pretty briefly. They just had the one panel, I believe, and it was just Matt Smith, Tom Glen Carney, and Fabian Frankel, I assume, because they're the ones who were in the city, because we know Matt Smith has been hanging around there filming something that we'll look at later.
A lot of people tend to be in New York City. I hear it's a populous area.
That is what I hear. So aside from that, fairly quiet week in Westeros. You have any other celebrity news, highlights, things like that you want to touch on, Dan? We have a couple.
Sure. We can. Peter Dinklage, star of Game of Thrones and the new hit Amazon Prime Video movie Brothers, where he stars alongside Josh Brolin as twin brothers who commit crimes as wacky and crazy people, was on Hot Ones, that show where they eat hot, which I've never actually watched once in my life. I've never seen Hot Ones. The thing,
are you serious?
I've seen this SNL parodies where Beyonce goes on Hot Ones.
Oh my god!
I haven't seen the actual Hot Ones where they eat really hot wings.
Oh, you are missing out.
Try and talk through it.
So good.
You know they're doing like a live Netflix show about it, like where it's gonna air live on Netflix and Hot Ones, so they can't like cut away from the reactions. Pretty good idea. Victor's on it. He said some stuff. How funny. We got Maisie Williams, who played Arya, and A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms star Dexter Sol Ansel, looking in this photo here like a fancy boy, are going to team up on a new road trip movie. Cute. 500 miles. That's nice. Game of Thrones veterans working together. And this is interesting. Hannah Murray, who played Gilly in Game of Thrones, is putting out an autobiography called The Make Believe, where she talks about how she was part of a wellness cult for a while, which led to her getting involuntarily committed, or as they call it in Britain, which I learned, sectioned, which is a reference to like the section of the legal code that refers to it. So what interesting things. Victor says he's depressed to hear that Andor season 2 just now finished filming. It just now finished filming? Andor season 2? Really? I hadn't heard that. That is strange, because that show's been off the air for a while now. Maybe I've read the details. Maybe it's like they finished some kind of little pickup thing a year later, like two years later they needed. That is sad. I want that show rather than later.
Yeah, that's so maybe they did pickups or something. Diego Luna confirmed they wrapped in February of this year. So they wrapped a lot. Yeah, they wrapped early. So they might have needed to come back and film some pickup shots, but they've been done with the main filming production of Andor for most of this year, it sounds like. So I'd assume we're going to get that next year.
Yeah, me too. 3-year break.
Yeah, 3-year break. But yeah, man, I'm just in disbelief over here that you've never seen Hot Ones. It's so good. That dude is such a good interviewer.
The bald guy, right?
Amazing. Yes. Yeah. Sean, I forget his last name. So one you should check out. He did one with John Mulaney, the stand-up comic SNL writer. John Mulaney just straight faced, ate all the wings and like critiqued the different wing sauces. Like the dude was a machine. I was so impressed.
Wow. Sociopath. All right.
Anyway, Hot Ones is great. But moving on, let's get into the main topic for today, which is adaptation. What makes a good one? And how have these four big fantasy shows that we've been watching these past several years, how have they all been handling it? So, Dan, I will just put this question out to you here at the start. Off the cuff here. So The Witcher, The Wheel of Time, The Rings of Power, and House of the Dragon.
Huh.
Which do you think has been treating its source material the best?
Okay. I will answer. That is a very good, interesting, deep question that could inspire some cool interactions. Can I like cheat and say, I know which one treats it the worst? That one's easy.
Sure. Which is that? Which is that?
That's the Rings of Power. Which
really
doesn't...
you think worse than The Witcher? Kidding?
Okay, that was the other qualification. I know The Witcher least well, so I'm least qualified to weigh in on that. The other three I all know decently. It's got to be The Rings of Power treats it the worst, right? I mean, it's at least the other three seem to make an attempt to follow the arc. I mean, The Rings of Power, man, we're talking about. So these books here by J.R.R. Tolkien are set over the course of thousands of years. They are saying these events take place in a few months. That seems like a very, very big break. Although it is complicated. Because I do think they try, and you know, they add in like these major new characters, like Adar is not a character in the thing, Disa is not a character, Gandalf is not a part of this at all, but he's has a whole plot in this. I think in terms of pure, like, if you consider faithfulness to be, you adapt what's on the page and you put it on screen, I think that's the least faithful. I do think they do try to capture the tone, maybe more than I'm not sure it's successful, but I think they do earnestly try more than a couple of others. Maybe there's two elements to faithfulness, and this is coming up right now.
Yes,
there's the is actually like, have you adapted what it says? In which case, The Rings of Power gets like a 2 out of 10. And are you trying to adapt the spirit of the thing? In which case, it's closer to like a 6.
Yeah, I agree with that. I totally think those are kind of the two big adaptation things you have to consider. Like fidelity of actual events, actual characters, and then the spirit and the tone. So it's funny because you know The Rings of Power well. You know The Silmarillion well. You've read it a few times. And you don't know The Witcher as well.
Don't embarrass me, yeah.
Okay, you've read it at least twice.
Still disgusting.
I've read The Witcher, and I read The Silmarillion once, and I did not particularly love it. I'm sure it'll be better on the reread. But it is interesting to me because, like, for the first few seasons, one of my biggest issues with The Witcher was that it felt like it really misunderstood some parts of the spirit of the books. Because the books, The Witcher is it's such an interesting book series because in terms of like the raw writing on the books, they're probably like the least good of these four in terms of like the actual books and their quality. Cause they have kind of like a rambling tone. Sapkowski goes off on tangents sometimes. Like it just, it's a little less put together, I guess, than these other huge series we're talking about. But the flip side to that is that they're a little more thought-provoking, like in terms of the themes, because he was really looking at real-world issues a little more than some of these other fantasy books.
Yeah,
because like xenophobia, like spoiler alert here, but that is basically the one thing Geralt of Rivia can't beat is people's fear of the other. So, and that's a thing that The Witcher really kind of botched in its first few seasons. Like, they had a few things, like, I always harp on about this. There's a monster called the Doppler that Sapkowski uses as a very clear metaphor for being afraid of someone who's different than you, even if they look and sound and act just like you, because this is a monster that shapeshifts to look like people. So they're a misunderstood creature in the world of The Witcher, and The Witcher show turned it around and had an evil Doppler and basically said, oh, we know that most of you are good, but really people are right to be afraid of you. Like, totally missed the metaphor. And I think The Witcher has had more issues like that than some of these other shows. But it is obviously trying to, at this point, stick to the overall arc of the story. I think the third season especially was a pretty big course correction in terms of how it's treating its book material. I'd still put it near the bottom of the list. I think it's a pretty close race between that and Rings of Power. But it's hard to get over that thousand-year thing, like you said, where they're really condensing the events of the Second Age.
I think Julie has it right, and we'll get into specifics, but I do agree with her rankings, and we'll get into why. The Wheel of Time, Curse of the Dragon, The Witcher Rings. If you were to look at The Witcher, give it like a rating out of 1 to 10 from adaptation in terms of like literal fidelity and then spirit and tone. I gave The Rings of Power like a 2 for literal fidelity. And I'm gonna take a 5 for tone, because someone pointed out, like, yes, like a Galadriel Elrond kiss is just a little CW, like a kiss to fake out a key, not the tone Tolkien had in mind. I do think they try to get to like the sweep of it. They try to be epic with it. They try to be optimistic. They try. God bless their hearts. They try. I don't think they quite get there. 2 and a 5. What's The Witcher to you?
I think The Witcher, I'm going to give it a 4 at this point in terms of fidelity to the text, which that is very much because of the third season. It would have been way lower than that before season 3. I cannot emphasize enough how much of a course correction that was for the series. So maybe a 4 for text fidelity. And then in terms of tone, I'm going to also maybe give it a 4 or 5. 4 or 5. I think the tone it has struggled with almost more than the, aside from season 2, which was just its own tangent where the show basically said, we can't adapt that book, it's a little too boring, let's make up our own, and it didn't go well. I think the tone, there are things about The Witcher, because it is, again, it's rooted in like Polish folklore, so it has real world roots in a way that some of these other series don't have, like a very specific real world root. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Where it's like the cultural touchstones are very clear in The Witcher, and the show feels like the Hollywood version of that at times. Like, so in that way, I think that the tone is almost a little bit lower at this point than the text fidelity. But yeah, I mean, I'm not going to defend Rings of Power. I think it's interesting to me that both of those shows feel like they have the corporate stamp more than the other two that we're going to talk about.
Yes.
You know, The Lord of the Rings, colon, The Rings of Power, you can just feel the corporate boardroom oozing off of that title. And I think when you look at the way that show is produced, there's a lot of incredible artisan work going on in the production of that series.
Totally.
But there's just something about it that feels like the corporate take on Tolkien. And that almost feels at odds with the spirit of Tolkien. You know what I mean? Like the spirit of those writings. Very. Like, you know, so
he was against the machine. Yeah, I think, like, Saruman is kind of a condemnation of industrialization. I can't imagine he would be totally thrilled with what free market capitalism has done to his work. Maybe. We don't know. We're not around. He's not around to say. And by the way, I enjoy both shows. I think those are on the bottom two for adaptation-wise. House of the Dragon. Here is the tricky thing with House of the Dragon.
Let's talk about
it. I think just looking at it like objectively, like in terms of literal events, it does hit most of them. It leaves out some things I wish it included. And it has some swerves that I don't... Well, I think I suspect why they're included, but I don't really want them to be included. I still think it gets like a solid 7. Like, most of the events that are in
yeah.
the text of Fire and Blood are there. And then it leaves like what I don't want to get too sidetracked. And the tone too is quite good. It's rich, it's baroque. It's it feels severe, it feels weighty. It feels like these things matter to these people. So I also, and it feels like Game of Thrones a lot of the time, which mm-hmm. I think it should, because it's in the same universe, same kind of thing. So I think I also get it a 7. Here's the thing with House of the Dragon, though. I feel like some of the big changes they've made have been borderline malicious, like towards the text.
Ooh.
In
okay.
a way in that not way? All the other shows do. So you mentioned that in The Witcher, there's this Doppler character, some monster that is a combination of racism in the books. It's they're misunderstood creatures in the show. Yes. It changes it. So it's actually just bad, which kind of which is directly against what he was trying to say. So in the book, totally. Misunderstood and you're being condemned for hating them. And in the show, no, they're actually evil and kind of like a validation of you hating the other. So I would call that a pretty strong contradiction to the theme it was going for. There's a bit of that in House of the Dragon. Like, the story is supposed to be about these two families who fight each other and in the process let their kind of ambition and their vengeance and their grudges and their hatred spin out of control to the point where they find they've destroyed their families, their country, and their own souls to get what they want.
And
they find that it's not worth it. Like, that's the story of Fire and Blood. And having, for example, Allison and Rhaenyra try to come together in House of the Dragon to stop this runaway train from going off the tracks, I think really changes the tenor of what the story is in Fire and Blood. I think that's a very intense way to kind of go back on what the core of the story is. It's, I don't know where they're going with it, but it feels like they're veering away from, this is a tragedy where people are too short-sighted to see what they're doing is hurting them and everyone around them, to something different, which is like this, maybe this story about how things go out of control despite the best efforts of these two heroic characters at the center to keep it from spinning outward, which is just, it's very, 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 very different. I'd say it's very against the tenor. So it's this weird irony where the Rings of Power is completely off the map of Tolkien. It's like connected kind of tangentially, glancingly, if at all, but that kind of like frees it up to just be its own thing, where I don't really, I don't think of the Rings of Power as a Lord of the Rings adaptation anymore. It's too far off the beaten path. So I don't have to think of it that way. I'm not really burdened by watching it and thinking, how's it measure to Tolkien? Because it's so far away from it. House of the Dragon, though, is close enough to Fire and Blood that these big changes and these big swerves feel more offensive to me and feel like they hurt more to me. And
that's interesting.
I would stick closer, or if it really wants to go off and I want to give up on thinking of it as an adaptation, just go further afield.
Well, that's interesting, because so House of the Dragon, I think of the four of these shows, I was going to say is sticking the closest to the events, but that's hard. I don't know that that's necessarily the case at this point anymore. I think it is still, like, in terms of feeling like it is trying to adapt the story, I think it does still feel like it is in that lane. But what you're saying about it going against the ideas of what the story is about, I think is really interesting. And I think, you know, when the initial marketing for this came out, which we had a poster that producer Richard put up a little while ago, that has Rhaenyra and Allison kind of facing off and that, you know, being a symbol of this conflict, and the show has really made it about Rhaenyra and Alicent's conflict at the heart of this thing. These two people who you get the feeling could just get along if everyone around them would shut up long enough. That does feel a little different than the story that the book was telling. So I think that's a pretty fair analysis that you just gave. And this is also probably a pretty good time to point out the Rings of Power and House of the Dragon have a similar issue with their source material. So all four of these series have very different sorts of source materials.
Sure.
Where Rings of Power and House of the Dragon are adapting what is essentially like abridged historical accountings of their respective events as told in the Silmarillion and the Appendices or Fire and Blood. Neither of those are like character focused stories where, you know, J.R.R. Tolkien's telling you how Sauron was mooning over Galadriel when he was trying to besiege Eregion. Like, obviously there's a lot the show has taken liberties with, and Rings of Power basically said, yes, we're just going to, like you said, go as far afield as we want. We're accepting that we can't pull this off if we're sticking to the thousands of year time frame and all that sort of stuff. We need a little bit more romance in there, so Galadriel will be the object of most people's affections. All those sorts of things where it's like, okay, you didn't need to do this. We probably would have enjoyed it anyway. You know, you want a Tom Bombadil season? Fine. House of the Dragon, it does feel like it is trying to stick to the text, but also they feel like they've got enough wiggle room to do their own thing because they are filling in the between the lines, the colors of the historical events, the character beats that you didn't quite get to see. I think they've taken that to the extreme with this season is kind of what we saw. So I think season three will be a little bit of a defining season for the show because we'll be able to see whether it's like The Witcher, which had a notoriously, in my opinion, bad second season in terms of adaptation. Like, if I had to point to any one season and say it was really just off the wall, awful adaptation wise, The Witcher season two is going to be near the top of my list. I hated it. It was so bad.
Wow.
But I think House of the Dragon will have a lot to prove with season three, whether they're going to go even farther afield off the rails or whether it will kind of get back to the spirit of that, like you said, that tragic story that's at the heart of that part of Fire and Blood.
I'll be watching closely. I want to respond to Victor really quick because I love this point, because I love responding to it. When Fire and Blood is written like a history, Victor writes, where everyone's lives are crap and a dark historical ends, has to direct a TV show that needs to have pregnancy we can root for, so it has to be different. I see the perspective of that, and I think that's what the writers tell themselves in the dark reaches of the night. I think if that's used as a justification for the major changes they've made, I would argue that the meaning of protagonist you can root for is too narrow, because we're pretty deep into this era of like prestige TV where which was kicked off by anti-hero shows like The Sopranos and The Wire and Mad Men and Breaking Bad. The Penguin right now, we're rooting for a straight up villain. It's been a long time since I think like root for is the same thing as is nice and wants everyone to like be good and happy and does the right thing. Those are not the same thing and have not been for a long time. The reality is I thought Daemon was way more interesting. Like, I need to be compelled when he was killing his wife with a rock and seducing his niece.
Which is a deviation from the book.
Well,
because
I mean,
Daemon he's notably not there when she dies. He's in the Stepstones.
Maybe I misremember. I thought in Fire and Blood that one of the crazier options is some thought that Daemon himself came and killed her, but I forget. But it was juicy. I don't, again, adaptations, I don't need it to be totally faithful word for word. I just wanted to be interested. But my point was, before I was so expertly derailed by your by your laudable devotion to accuracy, that I was more interested in Daemon when he was less traditionally likable than he is now when he's having dreams and learning about his misdeeds. Like that was better to me. I liked Alicent the most when she was coming at Rhaenyra with a knife, trying to kill her for taking her son's eye. That was the most interesting she was. So I reject the idea that a character we can root for is the same thing as a character who does the right thing. I think those are very different things.
Yeah, I fully agree with that. And I think we got a really good example of that and how House of the Dragon can do it well this season with Kristen Cole. Hated Kristen Cole in the first season. Hated him at the start of this season. I think he had one of the most compelling character stories in season two. And they didn't really deviate, aside from his relationship with Alicent. Most of Kristen Cole's story is just lightly coloring in between the lines of his actual book story. Like, what would it be like for a knight to lead a force of people to Rook's Rest and then see dragons fight in the sky and two thirds of the people you brought there die? And then how does that weigh on a person? That's the sort of building out of the story I feel like could work really well and did work really well this season, because Kristen, by the end, you know, he's still not like a good person. Like, I'm not suddenly like Kristen good the best, but like I was more compelled by him than a lot of the others, versus Daemon, where essentially Ryan Condal has talked about this. He really loves the Daemon story because it allowed him to do his version of like Paradise Lost, but with Daemon and Harrenhal. And it's like, that is just essentially saying you got to do a different story with a character you like within House of the Dragon. And that's why you thought it was so good, versus Kristen, where they're just building out what is already there.
That guy loves Paradise Lost. He runs it a bunch. It's fine. Go Milton.
Yeah. There's nothing wrong with Paradise Lost, but that is just, you know, that's inserting a very different kind of story from what was there in the first place, which is a huge, you know, tonally, does that fit? I don't know. Does that fit in the story of Fire and Blood? It wasn't in it, so we can only speculate. But should we talk about the other series? Yeah. Or do you want to respond first?
Let's get back to what we were talking about. I think I said what I wanted to say. I think it's, as an adaptation, if we're talking about adaptation Rumble, House of the Dragon is better than the other two, but some of its choices stick in my craw a little more because it's better. Cause I know that it's close enough that I can kind of mourn for those last few steps it hasn't quite taken. Whereas the Rings of Power is so far gone, I don't really think about it at all. go on.
I was just going to say, I think House of the Dragon, we can safely say, is ahead of the other two. The characters we can root for. I was just going to say, with the Wheel of Time, we've got another great example with Lanfear, who's pretty evil, but who is pretty much a fan favorite, and also a great example of capturing the tone and the spirit of the whole series, but changing events. Because Lanfear happened very differently in the show. So what did you think of the Wheel of Time?
I mean, again, I'll say that I don't know the books as well as you do, although I have read the ones this is adapted from. I don't know, like, back of my hand or anything. I would agree with Julie. I'd put Wheel of Time first, even though I get the idea they have changed a bunch about the plot. But
so much.
I guess.
So much.
It's all subjective. To be honest, when I'm reading the Wheel of Time, this doesn't happen when I was reading, say, the Silmarillion or Fire and Blood. Part of what I think is, you know what? You could probably change some of this and you'd be fine or even better off. I think the books are good. They're well written. I think we should talk about this sometime, about Wheel of Time specifically. I don't mind that they're cutting out, for instance, the way the books approach men and women as if they are different species that cannot possibly cross paths or understand each other ever. I don't mind that they're cutting out, say, the climax or combining the climax of the first book where Rand fights Baal Zemon and the climax of the third book where Rand fights Baal Zemon, and they made that one thing. I think that makes a lot of sense. So I think they've made decent choices where they deviate from the literal text in ways that preserve the overall story. So I would give that another, like, maybe six. But again, I'm not a Wheel of Time purist, and I'm sure people who are might disagree with me. And for tone, I feel like you can feel the love. I feel like you can feel just the desire to do a good job. I feel like this show is one where it has like likable characters in the more traditional sense.
Yes.
But the books have them too. So it doesn't feel like it's a betrayal of the source material to make them like people who want to do the right thing. And we don't need to be complicated about that. I've enjoyed Wheel of Time. I'd say the spirit of what the books that I can see, I'm going to give it a good old seven, which I think does make House of the Dragon. I think House of the Dragon is the closest adaptation. But I, you know what? I can't get over the way some of those choices feel like they fly in the face of the book. Whereas the Wheel of Time, the adaptation choices, I don't feel do that. I feel like they're trying to do the best version of the book they can reasonably be. So I put it at the Wheel of Time first. The House of Dragon, I think it's the best show on here, but it just frustrates me.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think in terms of the filmmaking, House of the Dragon is the best prestige fantasy show on this list. But I might be enjoying the Wheel of Time more. And I think it is interesting because it has the exact opposite of House of the Dragon and the Rings of Power, which is that it's based on a 15 book series, counting the prequel New Spring. And they, like you jokingly pointed out, like some, it has repetitive beats, like Rand fights Baal Zemon at the end of the first three books. Like, and very early in the process, Rafe Judkins met with Brandon Sanderson, who wrote the last three books of The Wheel of Time after Robert Jordan died, and basically said, like, we can't do this on TV because, you know, nobody is going to want to watch it. Exactly. Yeah. And they're trying to adapt the entirety of the book series in 8 seasons. So by necessity, they are going to have to cut and change things. But I agree with what you said about the changes feel like they know full well what they are changing. They're so this is one thing that, like you said, you have read a decent chunk of it, but without having read all of they are already like working tons of foreshadowing for the very end of the series has already been in the show. So like, it's very obvious that it, like you said, it's coming from a place of love for the thing instead of, if only it could be different. And I do think that there are some elements of, and I don't want to be like the books could have been improved. Like, I see what you're saying about some places where when you read it, it's like, well, this seems like a place for improvement. Like, you know, the Wheel of Time does have, there has been a bit of discourse around it over the years for, you know, things like you said, like the way it treats men and women, like almost a different species and stuff like that.
I'm rereading the Wheel of the Shadow Rising now. If I get to another chapter where like characters spend a good like quarter of their time talking about how the other gender is impenetrable to a member, I'm going to toss my phone in the garbage disposal. I don't even have one. I'm going to get one and do it. It's just Jesus. Just build a bridge. Okay, go on. Sorry.
Yeah. No, that's fair. And that is a consistent problem all throughout the Wheel of Time series. So this is an instance where it's like they had to change things. There is no world, and book purists like to ignore this fact, there is no world where a straight Wheel of Time adaptation makes sense on television. It just should not happen, in my opinion, because, you know, there's a notorious section called The Slog that's like three books long. Why would a studio in their right mind would adapt that straight, knowing that most fans like hate their lives while they read The Slog, even though there's good stuff in there. I'm not trying to shade those books. So even though the Wheel of Time has changed a lot of details, but it does seem like it's still trying to hit, you know, the big benchmarks. Like,
yeah,
the overall story of season two is still mostly in line with the story from the second book, even though it left out some stuff, it added in other stuff. It doesn't feel like it's in conflict with the source material, yeah, I guess, which has been an issue with maybe some of the other three in each of their own ways.
Yeah.
Which is so fascinating because Wheel of Time is probably the one that could have most stood to get that sort of update treatment in the adaptation, but somehow they're still doing it in a way that feels reverent as opposed to bitter and weird.
Not more reverence. Not that the other ones are bitter. And they're very different problems, like, because the Wheel of Time is like these giant books they have to pare down, whereas House of the Dragon, yes, Fire and Blood is like this smaller book they have to fill out. So the problems are different. Yes. I get that the challenges are different. But in the end, I'm going to go with Julie's original thing. Wheel of Time first, then Wheel House of the Time. Dragon, then The Witcher, then The Rings of Power. Because I'm sorry, you're just not getting over major parts of the story completely invented.
Yeah, I think...
As adaptations. You know,
so as adaptations, I'm going to start at the bottom. I'm going to say Rings of Power goes at the bottom. And that's... I did enjoy this season. So this is... We're nice. Strictly talking adaptation, not quality of seasons. I think The Rings of Power is at the bottom because it really does feel like just Tolkien fan fiction with the occasional beat from the appendices,
which
tend to be the best parts, which doesn't mean it's bad. This is not knocking fan fiction, but it does feel like a corporate mandated show that feels like a corporate mandated show that just really wants some Lord of the Ring for Amazon. Bezos wants a ring. So yeah, that can go at the bottom. I think The Witcher obviously is the third spot. Again, season three really saved that show for me. Before that, it would have been the worst because the spinoffs I did not like either. That's again where you can see the corporate touch to The Witcher, that they were launching spinoffs while the show was on like its second season. But it is following the story of the books in its own way. And at this point, it is pretty track with the book story for the most part, even though it's still inventing lots. A lot of the things it's inventing are just to beef up the story a little, so Geralt still gets to fight monsters and stuff like that. Man, it's really hard to choose between House of the Dragon and The Wheel of Time.
It is.
Because The Wheel of Time has changed, like, in terms of like straight fidelity to the text. Wheel of Time is pretty low. I'd give it maybe a 3, maybe a 4. But in terms of the spirit and the tone, it's like a 7.
Right.
At least a 7. So that is, it's really hard. It's really hard. But it feels like a lot of the Wheel of... Okay.
I would accept.
I know how I'm going to rank this. I'm going to put House of the Dragon at 2.
Okay.
I'm going to tell you, and I'll tell you why quickly before we move on.
Okay.
House of the Dragon is going to go at number 2 for me, and then the Wheel of Time. And the reason being, House of the Dragon made a lot of changes very intentionally that it didn't have to make.
Sure.
Because they just thought they could do XYZ and do it better, make it different, change the core of some things. The Wheel of Time, I give a lot of slack because they had, one, an insurmountable adaptation challenge in the first place with the books to the screen. And then they had production issues that none of these other shows had to deal with, like recasting Matt, which meant they rewrote the entire second scene almost after Matt left. The original Matt actor who was replaced in season 2. So I think the Wheel of Time, when it makes changes, it's because it needs to make changes to get it all to work and still make sense on screen. Whereas House of the Dragon is just making changes because it thinks it could do it better. And it's not working. So that's why I'm going to go with those rankings. So Wheel of Time won.
We've decided. And Victor, thank you for mentioning Demetrius Polychron, the author who wrote the Lord of the Rings sequel, who got sued by the Tolkien estate for doing.
Nice.
What a great name. Daniel, we have jawed for a long time. We are running behind. Why don't we move us along? What are you watching? Anything you want to talk about?
So Penguin remains excellent. Agatha remains a good, fun, spoopy Halloween show. Not bad. I'm enjoying my time with it every week.
Could be.
I saw the most recent Scream movie. Agatha could be worse. It is not a bad show. It's not getting me like the Penguin is, but I'm still enjoying it. Saw the most recent Scream movie. That was a lot of fun. I hadn't seen it. Very meta, good slasher film to watch on the holiday. Cool. And then the only other thing I will mention that I'm getting into is the Bloodsworn series by John Wynn. This is Norse-inspired Viking fantasy type books. The third and final book in the trilogy, The Fury of Gods, came out yesterday on Tuesday, October 22nd. I think that'll be the 24th if you live in the UK. But yeah, I am about to finish the second one of these and then start on the third. Chef's kiss. Don't make a God of War show, Amazon. Just make this show, because this series is so, so good. But yeah, that's what I'm getting into. What have you been watching, Dan?
Victor, I mean, the Penguin, like you said, and Victor just mentioned it. What We Do in the Shadows is back for its final season. I disagree.
Oh, yeah.
Victor says he liked the first and liked the second. I liked them both. The first probably better. I loved the show for a long time. It's a good show. It has a great... taken like the mockumentary style of The Office and Parks and Rec back in the day, and taken it to absurd extremes where they're following around vampires with their daily lives who are stuck in like the 18th, 17th, 16th centuries where they live in Staten Island. Funny show, well written, really well acted. By this point, some of the performances have been kind of iconic. Matt Berry as Laszlo Cravensworth is basically a new iconic stock character in the collective consciousness. Good show. Good ass show. I'm glad it's gonna end on a, it looks like it's gonna end on a high note. And Julie's watching Daryl Dixon. Sorry. The Lord of, no, The Walking Dead,
nice.
Daryl Dixon, M-Dash, The Book of Carol, which I do hear is very good. People are really, really enjoying that. Ooh. No. Oh, thank you. And Dragonheart 613 has a featured comment. Says, Wheel of Time was good, but need new showrunner and better writers. House of Dragon, great, but some war and no more Alicent. The Witcher season 1 and some of 2 were okay, but 3 and HC. Oh, Henry Cavill leaving has killed
Cavill.
It. Thank you, Dragonheart. I think we take issue with a bunch of that, but I appreciate the comment.
Yes. Yes, thank you for the super chat.
This week.
Respectfully disagree on season 3 of The Witcher, which is its best season.
Yeah, you will go down fighting that. That's the hill you will die on, which I don't even disagree with you. We could break down the minutia behind that, but we are running out of time. So why don't
we
get to the WIC News lightning round, where we go over a bunch of stories we couldn't get to in the main body of the show and give our 20-second opinions on them. And we have a big one for you today.
We do. There's a lot of lightning in this lightning round. So if you have never watched the show before, listened, what have you, welcome. This is our world famous lightning round, where we have 20 seconds to break down news stories we didn't get to in the main body of the show, or producer Richard buzzes us into infamy and shame, which sounds like that. All right, Dan, these are shockingly in order. So this first one's for you. Are you ready?
Yeah.
All right. Check out this picture of Matt Smith in his new film, Caught Stealing.
Is it Matt Smith, Daemon Targaryen, with a flaming hot mohawk and a gun? He's in this crime drama with Austin Butler. I mean, all this is look at Matt Smith's hair. That's the entirety of this story. It looks crazy. It looks wild. Apparently he might shave his head just to make the Daemon wig fit easier, is his latest thing he said. Moving on. Daniel, speaking of the Wheel of Time showrunner that Dragonheart mentioned, Rafe Judkins is no longer working on Amazon's God of War show, which they were going to make based on the video game series. Instead, Amazon's bringing in Ronald D. Moore, who's behind Battlestar Galactica, behind Outlander, behind a bunch of Star Trek shows. Pretty big name to bring in.
It is a big name. Ronald D. Moore doesn't miss, so I'm sure this will be good if he's working on it. But I also do have a strong feeling of like, this feels like folly to me to be trying to make God of War as a television show, because so much of it is big video gamey set pieces.
Yeah.
Jury's out. We'll see how it goes. But Ronald D. Moore, man. Yeah, that's it. I talk too long. Okay. Here is a fun one, depending on if you're Elon Musk or not. So Blade Runner 2049 producers, Alcon Entertainment, they're suing Elon Musk and Warner Brothers Discovery for using AI-generated images that bear a striking resemblance to Blade Runner at a robotaxi event.
Yeah, that's the image from Blade Runner. The one that Elon Musk used was like a kind of orange apocalypse escape with a guy in the duster. And he even mentioned Blade Runner during the speech, and they claim he asked for permission and they denied it. So there's more than just the images.
Yeah.
It seems like a decent case they have. We'll see what happens to it. What a fun little thing. Daniel, here's something that, because I know that you enjoy Aliens or Predators. You enjoy one of those, maybe both.
I enjoy all of them. Both
work. Alien Romulus, the new movie, is being released on a fully functioning VHS tape. It's number 30. Gonna get it?
I mean, I don't have a VCR, so I'm not gonna get it. But I love it on premise. Someone, Fede Alvarez does, the director of Alien Romulus, I guess. I love this because it's kind of honoring the roots of Alien, which like had a really, you know, I have fond memories of those VHS tapes of the original movies, so love to see it. Here's an interesting one. So The Hunt for Gollum, that is the new Lord of the Rings movie in the works with Andy Serkis returning as Spoopy Gollum. The Hunt for Gollum is not two movies, which we had heard it was a while back. But there is a second live action Lord of the Rings movie in development. What the hell is going on, Dan?
It was Ian McKellen said he thought The Hunt for Gollum was two movies, but apparently that he's got a sales mixed up a bit. There are two movies that both might involve Gandalf, but they are not The Hunt for Gollum Part 1 and Part 2. the takeaway is the Lord of the Rings, they're really trying to make it happen on the big screen. I'm not sure if the first one's going to go well. I don't know how that animated one might do, so we'll see how that fares later this month. Daniel, this was a big one. Marvel has delayed its Blade movie starring multiple Academy Award winner Mahershala Ali. Again, it's on like several times, can't get it together. Instead, where the Blade movie would have aired next year, they will drop Predator Badlands, another movie that is different.
Well, the good news is that I'm really excited for Predator Badlands because it's the next Predator movie. I love Predator. I loved Prey from Dan Trachtenberg, who is also doing Predator Badlands. So psyched about that. But man, I feel bad for Blade. Marvel just can't get its act together with this Blade movie. Sorry, Mahershala Ali.
What's happening?
Okay. This is a fun one for Horror Month. So Mike Flanagan, horror guru, creator of The Haunting of Hill House, Midnight Mass, all those other good shows, he's making a Carrie show.
Yeah, that could be fun. I like Carrie. I like The Haunting of Hill House, Haunting of Bly Manor, The Haunting of Blank. Carrie, yeah. Blood on her head, Zassy Bullet Prom, Sissy Spacek, good movie. Why not? That could be good. Like a high school horror thing. Long history of it. Stephen King is never out of style. Rock on.
Yeah, totally.
Daniel, we're telling you, it's a big one. Kim Bodnia, who played the elder Witcher Vesemir in The Witcher, will not return for season 4 of that show because of scheduling conflicts. He's the second person to be recast.
Yes. So Vesemir will be back in the next season of The Witcher, but he'll be played by someone else. Because, Kim Bodnia is in a racing movie on Apple TV Plus, and because of the Hollywood strikes last year, the writers and actors strikes, schedules got shuffled around and no longer could do both of them. Vesemir will look different in the next season of The Witcher. Here's one. So The Boys... The Boys, always on top of it. They have already put out a Homelander photo mocking presidential candidate Donald Trump's McDonald's photo app.
So Trump, whoever saw this, he worked at McDonald's for like 15 minutes and they took pictures of him in like a little McDonald's apron. And the boys, like Homelander has always kind of been like a Trump analog, like this kind of rising proto-fascist. So, of course, they had to do this. They had to put together a little cute photo of Homelander giving McDonald's out to people. They're always doing that kind of wacky stuff. Ooh, is Theseus. Yep. Then it's pretty good. Okay, moving on. Daniel, Tom Holland, noted British actor who's pretending to be an American icon, has confirmed that the fourth Spider-Man movie, Spider-Man 4, is happening. They're going to start filming next summer.
Yeah, that's exciting. We got this confirmation on The Tonight Show just this week. I didn't expect it to start filming next year already. So
yeah, that sounds quick.
That's good news. Holland's greatest Spider-Man. I will gladly watch him in another movie. I hope that it's good. I hope that they've taken the time to make a good movie. That's my hope for that one.
Been a minute.
It has been a minute, and that is fine, studios. There's more than enough else to watch. Speaking of, you might be watching The Legend of Vox Machina on Prime Video right now. If so, good news. Amazon has renewed The Legend of Vox Machina for season 4.
Yeah, nice. Vox Machina, I can't really get into it. It's a little superficial, maybe. A tad bland, but it's a fun show. It's done with love, well animated, pretty cool. So I'm glad we're going to get their fourth season. 100 years, yep. May it live 100 years. Still lots. yeah, there you go. And finally, we're done. Noted author Brandon Sanderson, Wheel of Time author, is writing a novelization of his book White Sand. What does that mean?
Yeah. So Brandon Sanderson, early in his career, wrote this book, White Sand, that never got published. Then recently it was put out as graphic novels. Now he's going back and he's writing a whole new version of the White Sand book as a novel again. So that you'll have the other one was never really published. You could get it through his newsletter and stuff, but now it's going to be an official book in bookstores. So that's
wasn't the magic eye tesseract snake eating its own tail kind of bullcrap is that? Okay, but it sounds fun. I'm glad for everybody. We talk about today. We didn't even get to the Doom Prophecy trailer that Victor mentioned. It did look really good. I'm trying to get screeners for that. I'm trying to get some interviews for that. Cross your fingers for me. I'm talking to the people. Or that they dropped a Severance trailer today, which is coming out in January. Yeah, lots of stuff happening. And if you want to keep up with it, find out what's happening, you can follow us. You can turn into Take the Black Live every Wednesday at 2 p.m. CST right here on the Winners Coming Facebook and YouTube page. You can subscribe to us. You can like us. You can leave comments. I know you got that covered. You can go to winnerscoming.net and see of all what we're writing, where we do interviews, news, editorials, all kinds of crazy stuff. Thank you, Julie. Good seeing you, too. See you next week. Best website, I agree, says Victor. If you're not following,
thank you,
you're
Victor.
Lame. I don't think you're all lame, but I'll say this. If you do follow us, you will become cooler. And that is scientifically proven. So thanks for watching and keep that in your mind the next time you open your computer and decide, or phone, and you decide what to type in. Bye.
That's right. Take care, all.
This podcast is brought to you by FanSided. Join our community of over 300 sites from sports to pop culture and everything in between.
Did you know that in Ohio, the state Supreme Court could just ignore the reproductive rights amendment we passed last year?
But so many Ohioans voted for it.
That's why we need to keep extremists out of the court by voting for Justices Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
I don't know if I can remember that.
Here's the trick. Just remember, don't stop fighting. DSF. Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes. If you supported Issue 1 last year, don't stop fighting. Vote for Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
This message was paid for by Red, Wine, and Blue.